welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And as I mentioned before, it's a really good idea if you've got iTunes or Winamp or something of that nature to go to the AmericanFreedomRadio.com's Listen Live page and download the audio streams there, because you can just plug them into that little whatever MP3 playing program you got, and it'll play the stream. You don't even have to go to the website. So even if the website's down, you can still listen to the show live. How about them apples? And also, there are commercial-free archives available at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. You can try them for free, and if you like them, then please, you know, start a regular donation of around about $5 a month. Some people donate $100, some people donate $50, some donate $1 a month. You know, whatever you can contribute. Do not donate if you haven't already paid for your rent and food and shelter, clothing and electricity bills and all of that kind of stuff for you and your family. Take care of your family first. Well, rather take care of yourself first, because you can't take care of yourself. How are you going to take care of your family? And then take care of your family, because if you don't have your whole house in order, how are you going to take care of anybody else? And then start thinking about other people, you know. Maybe the people in your neighborhood deserve your help and time and attention more than I do, okay? Really think about it. But if you do like this show, if you do like the extraordinarily wide range of guests that we have, if you do like having fun amidst all of this madness, then please, by all means, donate, and do so regularly, because that pays all the bills, keeps us chugging, and also gives us the ability to buy new fancy equipment so that we look uber professional, so that when we walk up to, I don't know, the Prime Sinister, wearing a very nice suit and tie with a professional-looking microphone and a giant camera or something like that, he doesn't automatically shoo you away as somebody who's going to expose the scumbaggery, which will then allow you to expose the scumbaggery. See, I call suits urban camouflage. And that's what I do when you go out to a protest or you go out to a public meeting. Dress up, mate. You know, what have you got to lose? People always go, wow, you look really dapper and so on and so forth. And when you speak, they listen to you as though you've got some kind of authority. So they've been mind controlled by the by this fake suit and tie and what have you, in order to think that you know what you're talking about. It's just incidentally I do, but, you know, it's the problem, isn't it? How do you be honest to people and not tell them lies whatsoever in order to get what you want? And the answer is persuasion. Free will. You don't have to lie. You don't have to deceive. You don't have to make things up at all. Just be true to yourself and don't let anything at all that isn't genuine come out of your mouth. Have a bit of humility. Admit when you're wrong. You'd be surprised how little you stress about what it is you say and do if you don't care whether or not you're wrong. If somebody comes up to you and tells you that you're wrong, you're actually like, oh, really? Excellent. Thank you for telling me. Now I have the correct information. And I'm going to go on and continue. You know what I'm saying? Everybody is really afraid to be proven wrong. And that's why I think a lot of people wind up trusting their radio show hosts and YouTubers and what have you just way too much, okay? Look, ordinary people got flaws, you know, social habits. You ever moved in with somebody who you don't know very well and you find out that they got all these really, really bad habits that just drive you absolutely crazy? It's like that. Guarantee it. Each and every one of us people on the radio would drive you nuts if you were living with us. This is incidentally when me and my missus figured out a long time ago that we don't want to live with nobody else. Right? Because you can't really trust people implicitly unless they've got a long track record and you're actually willing to look through that track record. I've got a track record. It's called a YouTube channel. You go back and you start watching all my videos from years and years ago, exposing scumbaggery, and all the stuff that I'm doing now, still exposing scumbaggery, and you'll notice a lot of changes in me, but my tune doesn't change. The message doesn't change. The quality changes. It gets better, more refined over time. And this is why I encourage people, go out and do yourself a challenge. Your very first ambush. You got a smartphone or a little handy cam there? I'll tell you what. You go up to any random authority figure. Hey, some of you could be doing this right now, listening to the iPhone or Android app that you can download at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Somebody could be, at the very moment, walking past you with a parking, giving somebody a parking ticket, or stopping somebody in the street with an unlawful search and seizure or something of that nature. And you're there with a camera and the knowledge, and you can ask questions. Go up to them, you know. Get in their business. Ask them, are you okay? What's going on here? They tell you to go away. You ask, why? Why do I have to go away? And because I said so. And I say, well, what gives you the authority? I'm not trying to interfere or do anything damaging here. I'm just documenting this so that people will know what goes on if there's any dispute later on. Just be polite. You don't need to convince anybody of anything. All you can do is just sit there knowing the truth and have a conversation with somebody. All right? That's it. Have a conversation on camera. Go out and do it. Send me the video link. Or anything. I'll upload it to the channel for you. You do your first ambush. And after you do your first one, then you think to yourself, I'm going to do another one. And then another, and another, and then it's got you. It's a rush, man. It's actually a lot of fun going out, exposing scumbaggery, hanging out with other people that also like to expose scumbaggery. It's a very zen feeling, particularly when you know that you've got a camera in the face of a real psychopath. Somebody wouldn't think twice about selling out the country. And you're doing something which the mainstream media will never do. Ask them real questions and hold them to account. I think this is our job now. A lot of us might not be credible journalists or anything like that, but you name me one mainstream media allegedly credible journalist who's actually credible, right? Considering all of these newscasters literally have to sit there and either water down what they're reporting you, if they're going to tell the truth, or just report lies that the government says and tells them to write. Okay? They're just a propaganda arm. That's it. And that's all that we are as well at the end of the day. But propaganda is like an inanimate object. You know, it doesn't have necessarily a connotation, neither does manipulation. I could manipulate a pen to write a film script or a song, right? Or I can manipulate somebody into thinking that their father's a pedophile and call the cops on him so that he gets arrested and thrown in jail for absolutely no reason and has his entire life destroyed because I don't like that guy and I wanted to steal his company off him. You know? There's two different types of things right there. Just like propaganda. There's what they call black propaganda, which is where you use lies to convince people to achieve a particular idea. And white propaganda, whereas you use truth for the same ends. Imagine that. Imagine that the greater truth movement is about not watering down the truth. It isn't about framing the debate. It's about giving people time to think. Useful information, coping mechanisms. How to take care of your own health and your diet, so on and so forth. If we can, and indeed we are starting, to broaden this gap between what the truth really is and what's being reported, right? I think we really need to close that up. if you have any idea how bad things really are. It's intensely depressing. That's the problem with accurate reporting, is it depresses the living frack out of you. Oh, this guy's accurate and he's credible. Oh, mate, I don't want to listen to that. It sounds scary. Dang right. Truth is scary, mate. You know? Scarier than any artificially made horror movie, that's for dang sure. You wouldn't believe the kind of human abuse and sacrifice and what have you that goes on behind the scenes, man. It's unbelievable. That's why you wouldn't believe it. Even if it was shown to you in a movie, you still wouldn't believe it, that it really goes on. Allegedly, that's why they killed Stanley Kubrick after making Eyes Wide Shut, which incidentally was had a big sex party in a mansion, which was incidentally a Rothschild-owned mansion at the time. And it shows you just kind of what lengths of depravity can actually happen if you have enough money and power to conceal your scumbaggery. But you know what? That only works if people are actually giving in to the intimidation. If they say to you, shut up or we're going to kill you, and instead of shutting up, you start up a giant website and a whole bunch of other stuff to wind up taking these scumbags into your, I don't know, fold or whatever. Hey, you can run up to them with a camera and start asking them a question. Luke Rakowski did it. He ambushed some kind of Rothschild on the side of the street. Vicente Fox, the former drug money laundering, probably a current drug money laundering, allegedly, president of Mexico and what have you. These people are right out in the open because they think nobody knows. They also think that nobody cares enough to get off their ass and actually come and ambush them. And they're very, very surprised when they do. They don't know how to react. You know? You must say these silver spoon in hand kids who never had to really do anything for themselves in their life. Their first car is a limousine. They can't take care of themselves at all. They barely tie their own shoes. They can't even make toast. That's what the elite are like now. They've been pampered, prospered, had all these frickin' cronies and everything their entire life, taking care of everything for. Never been challenged once. And now, here we have, ladies and gentlemen, the opportunity of a lifetime to expose this scumbaggery in a very, very, very public manner. So that if any repercussions happen to any of us, it would have to be like a willing sacrifice, of course. You know, you can't tell people, go off and do this or whatever, knowing that there could be dangerous consequences that you're not prepared to put up with yourself. It's like a bad leader, you know? Bad leader who orders people to do things that he wouldn't want to do himself. That's BS, man. You got to be in there. You got to be in the thick of it. You got to be in the front. And you got to watch out for each other, you know? Why in the frack are people infighting? All right, there's actually real agents in the truth movement, man. If you've got differences of opinion and stuff like that with each other, fine. But if somebody's actually telling lies and subverting and doing all provocatoring and what have you, it's your duty as a member of the movement to protect other people from said scumbag and expose them. All right, it's the reason why you'd go up with a camera to a David Rockefeller or a Amschel Rothschild. It's the reason why you'd ambush Henry Kissinger or a John Key, all right? If you hold these people to account, you can actually make a real difference instantly, okay?
Well, what difference do you make instantly? They still care about being scumbags?
Yeah. But before, there wasn't a video on YouTube of you exposing them as a scumbag and actually getting in there to ask a real question, showing that you, just an ordinary person with nothing else really to your credit, can still go and do it successfully. You get it? That's how powerful you are. The elite don't want you to know that. If you figure out how powerful you are and you start exercising your responsibility to expose scumbaggering, then the whole system falls apart. It's predicated on you doing nothing. Therefore, just do the direct opposite, which is something, anything. Just don't do nothing. We'll be right back.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you, give me a dessert, give me a dessert, give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick, give me that dessert. I'll have a Bloody Mary, yeah, give me a whiskey sour, yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. Welcome you want back. To know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Also on Rush FM, which is in Hamilton, Raglan, Tauranga, Auckland, soon to be hopefully Taupo. And Affinity FM as well for various locations around the South Island, including Invercargill, Queenstown, and I think Dunedin and Christchurch. You'll have to be correct me on that one. But yeah, very good, brave radio networks in New Zealand. The first, in fact, and I couldn't forget Dagsy FM up in Whanganui there as well. Brave radio station owners and runners who have the guts and the gusto to broadcast this particular show. Bray, let's think about traces, all right? We've all seen movies and seen references and heard of things about traitors. They got to destroy a country from within. Almost every movie has a traitor in it somewhere, especially monster movies, because you can't have a monster just being the only threat. There also has to be somebody on your team who's betraying you. The traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face in their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. The traitor is the plague. That was written by Marcus Tullius Caicero, 106 to 43 BC. Let's think about being aware of the traitors among us and be vigilant, but also remember, and this is the real hard part about when people do infighting as well, is you don't know which side to trust. And that's usually because it's so ugly that you don't actually want to look at the evidence for fear of what you might find. And that's what I find really disheartening, is when people are infighting and they're actually, if you look into both sides, you find out that they're infighting for absolutely no reason. And that you could just say to them, look, bro, you're infighting for absolutely no reason, you know, chill out, what's going on here, you know, you used to be good friends and stuff, and it's just a misunderstanding. And you know, who knows, people might kiss and make up and just go, oh, well, you know, sorry, bro, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. But there's some people who actually, and this doesn't qualify as infighting, that are actually criminals, you know, like bad people who are so evil, such as the size and scope of their scumbaggery, that to expose them is basically a public service. Because there's so many dangerous people that, if given the reins of power, if given the authority to speak to millions whilst being in the employ of some form of agency and some form of concocted scumbaggery, To expose them is technically not infighting, is it? No, it's not. There's a very big difference, and people better be wise to remember the difference. The thing is, you just need to look into the evidence. Really, really, unfortunately, it's sometimes very time-consuming, but if you really want to know the truth, like if it actually means that much to you, often the evidence will be there, and you'll be able to look for it, listen to it, watch it, and make up your own mind. Don't dismiss things offhand before looking at the evidence. Just say, and this is a perfectly reasonable, justifiable excuse in my opinion, I don't want to get involved. All right? It's like, it's more trouble than it's worth, and it's not my fight kind of thing. You know? That's fine. I can vibe with that. It's like if you've either got to pick a side or decide that you don't want to be a part of it at all. All right? That's all you've got to do. And if you're going to pick a side, you better damn well be sure that you're looking at all the evidence from both sides before you pick which side you're on. A little bit of discernment goes a long way, because imagine if you were attacking somebody for years and years and years, and then it turned out everything that you were attacking them for was just a lie somebody said to you that you believed and never checked up. And as a result of these lies that you've been perpetuating, somebody's entire career or life has been destroyed. Their children may have been taken from them by CPS on a false allegation or something of this nature. You know, don't make accusations willy-nilly. You can destroy people's frickin' lives. Imagine if somebody was about to destroy your life with a vicious lie or attack. How would you feel? You wouldn't feel very good about it, would you? All right? Which is why the people who go out and actually do this, I would say, I guess the word is professionally, who are professional liars, you know, like politicians, heads of industry, CEOs, that kind of thing. These type of sociopathic, incredibly powerful scum who are so dangerous. Mostly because they've got an inordinate amount of influence, but also at the same time as having that influence, they've got influence over the very mechanisms of enforcement that would punish them for having said influence, such as their strength, such as the difficulty in bringing them down. You can expose somebody, sure, but just exposing them is not enough. Often there needs to be campaigns of such a nature that will indeed allow people to get access to all of the information that would convince them of the eventual obvious truth that this particular scumbag is in fact a scumbag, and it wasn't just some baseless allegation, it was actually based upon evidence. And we need to deport or jail or oust or impeach said scumbag from whatever position they currently occupy. This is why I think infighting is often a waste of time, because all you need do is produce the evidence and the infighting stops. Because if somebody's actually got evidence, there's no arguments, is there? There's only fallacious spin doctoring that they can use to defend themselves. And if your evidence is good enough, stark enough, and spread fast and wide enough, it doesn't matter what kind of spin doctoring they do, doesn't it? They're fracked, and they know that they are. And that's when it becomes really, really dangerous. Imagine a president with literally access to the red button that could destroy the whole frickin' world, backed into a corner, scared out of his mind, and just looking for a way out, with no conscience. You know, imagine the horrors that can be unleashed with this kind of scumbag around. It's extraordinary how some people refuse to look into the darkness. and call themselves light workers. I'll tell you what. Your light shines the brightest and is the most visible amidst the darkness. And I've chosen to bathe in that darkness every day when we talk about scumbaggery. Scumbaggery is very dark indeed. And nobody should underestimate the power of scumbaggery. It's very dangerous. It deceives. It steals. It kills. It rapes. It provides pretexts. It assassinates. It poisons. It contaminates. It destroys everything it touches. This is why my fight is not with you, the listener. My fight is not necessarily with every politician or every company. My fight is against the symptom of scumbaggery. If we do not expose it, then it simply grows in power and scope. Always does. Always has. That is why it is so dangerous. That is why the world needs all of us now. Imagine, just for a moment, if you will, one day, many years from now, scumbaggery has become outlawed. People don't get robbed. People don't get murdered. People don't get invaded. And people don't get into debt. Not anywhere near as much as they did. And even if something was unfortunate enough to happen, you can be assured that it's somebody who would actually feel guilt for what they've done. And you can be assured that they would be punished by somebody who takes the oath seriously. That's the kind of world that I want. A world where scumbaggery cannot take root again. But it requires vigilance. A lot of it. Every single day. See all these false flag terror attacks. All these purposeful contaminations. And you just realize that the water's heating up. We're not sitting in a nice cool pond pattering away the day anymore, are we? We're sitting on a pot on a stove that has turned up very, very gradually, and only just now is starting to burn our flesh with the pain and suffering and anguish and scumbaggery. What is the motivation behind people who wish to perpetuate that system? They've given up. They've given up on humanity. They've given up on the goodness of the mankind spirit, our eternal souls, and turn their back on it. These are not the kind of people you want ruling your future. These are not the kind of people you would even give your dog to look after. These are the kind of people that should be, as Churchill said, thrown onto the trash pile of history, but always be remembered for who they really are and what they really did, so that that kind of BS doesn't happen again. For fighting it, even as we're doing it now, is this very, very terrible battle that leaves deep scars throughout all of our minds and our hearts and our nations. Cast off the scumbaggery. Cast it off now. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. And we'll be right back after the break. show broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And next hour we will be having a very special guest drop in from the Rents Radio Network, a wonderful show host that they have called Charlie McGrath, who's a long-time friend of the show and has helped out with the United We Strike broadcast and Karen Quinn Tostado for a number of years. A good man. We're talking about some, I don't know what he's going to be talking about. It's always good with Charlie, generally. In the meantime, I posted a Facebook status the other night, and I thought, speaking of scumbag rain, this is a test to see how many scumbags we all know. Please leave a comment with the name of one scumbag who is engaged in scumbaggery that you've heard of. And it's interesting to just see how many responses there are, and including, you know, members of the truth movement mentioned here, and all of this sort of thing. It's quite dire that if you put up a post talking about, I don't know, name one thing that you love about the world or whatever, you know, you get like about 3 replies. But if you say name a scumbag, get about 67 replies. It just, maybe that's because scumbags was a really weird pronunciation. Get you so riled up and so upset. And it's almost like they throw your fight or flight mechanism into overdrive, sort of thing. You know, you get incredibly angry. It's like your mind and your body become one with the rage when it comes to scumbags. You know? Somebody who's a real bad person just shafts you real nastily and then lies about it blatantly. That kind of scumbag. It really Fs you off, doesn't it? It makes you swear. It makes you get like so enraged that, oh, I don't know, you have these violent outbursts. You get really defensive. You get overly paranoid. I mean, it's almost like they're infecting you with their scumbaggery. And apparently that's actually true. Did you know that psychopathy is infectious? You know that? That's a pretty freaky discovery, don't you think? Yeah, if you are having contact, like physical contact with the psychopath on a regular basis, they can actually turn you into one of them. They can take away all your empathy. They can implant a seed in your mind of pure scumbaggery, of darkness, of callous nature, lack of empathy. Whew! That scares the heck out of me. Didn't it scare you? See, this reality is pretty frightening, isn't it? Especially when you're talking about reality. A lot of people don't want to talk about reality. They want to talk about ethereal topics of no relevance. And I'm also getting concerned that many of us have not learned the very simple lesson where if somebody's saying it's the end of the world, they're probably full of BS, you know? I mean, statistically speaking, how many times have people predicted... See, here we go. Here's how I prove my point. How many times has somebody predicted the world would end and it actually ended? I rest my freaking case. You know, a lot of people freaking out about Comet Eisen at the moment. I saw it on NASA. It's like, it's not really going to come anywhere near Earth. I mean, you'll be able to see it in the night sky. It happens from time to time when we have comets coming into the solar system. What's the, you know? It's almost like every single celestial event, like way back in the day, you know, like Aztec calendar or something like that. They knew that there was an eclipse coming. So they said to everybody, oh, it's going to be the death knell of everything unless you allow me to sacrifice a whole bunch of people and let the blood run in the streets. You know, I'm not saying that the people promoting Comet Eisner are promoting that kind of thing, but it's the same kind of mentality, I think. It's the end of the world, oh no. That kind of fear of the end of the world. I experienced that, I don't know, maybe a little bit when I first started finding out about, you know, what some people were saying 2012 was going to look like when that movie came out. So, oh no, that can't be good. That can't be good at all, bro. Maybe we should get together on your parents' land and build an ark. Yeah, man, it'll be awesome. We never built an ark. Couldn't be fucking bothered. And it turns out we didn't need it. Why? So we can, float around on a nuclear radiation contaminated ocean for like 400 years? Fuck that. I'd rather just die. What are you going to do? Think you're going to live forever? Sweet mother of mercy. You know, I do think that we place far too much importance on what makes us happy. I mean, that may sound like a weird statement coming from me, but really think about this. How much instant gratification do we crave? Okay? I instantly need a coffee, you know? Or at the end of the working week, I instantly need a beer. Or I instantly need that video game, or I instantly need to access that movie on YouTube or something like that. And I got to thinking about this when the power was cut out the other day. How much an over-reliance on automatic stimuli that we have. You know, back in the day, people used to play group sports and things. Nowadays, because we've got electricity, all these devices and everything everywhere, we virtually don't even talk to each other. Even when we're in each other's presence the whole freaking time. One's got headphones on, one's watching the TV, your bro's zoned out, blinded by goodness knows how many freaking bits of resolution of HD television screen that you can freaking ever desire. And before you know it, society's crumbled apart because nobody knows each other, even though you're living right in the freaking same house, let alone knowing your next door neighbour. That's what these electronic devices and entertainments and distractions that have been proliferated around society for a very long time indeed, I think are ultimately for. So that instead of entertaining ourselves by having fun with other people, we've got fun on tap so that we no longer need other people. And because we no longer need other people, we develop an ability to survive without any real human contact. You notice that? When was the last time you went into a big office building in a big city or something like that and saw people hugging in the lobby? You're like, hey, bro, how's it going? You know, doesn't happen, does it? Everyone's real professional. They keep their heads down, try to keep out of everybody else's business. Glued to their iPhone. It's messed up, bro. I don't know. Maybe I've got a unique perspective to a lot of people because I'm from New Zealand. Look, it's the same difference, all right? You go to London, you got cameras, you got motorways, you got department stores. Yeah, you got that in Auckland too. You got that in Cincinnati, Ohio, got it in LA, you got it in frickin' Germany and in Berlin. You got it in Canberra, Australia. You got it everywhere. Okay, it's one global system now. Imagine that. The globalists have, over the course of 100 years, maybe even thousands of years, some people speculate, passed down through bloodlines and such, an entire culture that extends globally where people have subtracted their human interaction for electronic entertainment. Poisonous electronic entertainment, mind you, for the EMF waves and all of that kind of stuff coming off them. That's not good for you. And on top of that, what other ways is it toxifying your mind? What kind of, I think you're going from beta waves to alpha waves or alpha waves to beta waves or something like that when you're going down the chain and you're no longer thinking. You're just in a suggestible, dreamlike state. Happens after about 30 seconds. There's a certain amount of flickers per second that the television screens were specifically designed to do, and I believe the CIA had a hand in that design function to find the exact flicker rate where the conscious mind could no longer process the images it was seeing and had to slip into semi-consciousness in order to process it. And at that point, it opens you up for subliminal messaging. Doesn't that scare the frack out of you? That they got that kind of premeditation to mind control you. And here we are, stuck into it. What does the average American watch? 6 hours, 8 hours TV a day? It's unbelievable. How many people have conversations with other people about something important for 6 or 8 hours a day? There's just no freaking way, bro.
Your weapons are
it's unbelievable.
Reach within you. And find
the yeah, sometimes it just gets all on top of you and you really can't stand it. But anyway, thankfully, there's a break. And I'm going to have a coffee or something because I'm not really feeling it. I'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Anderson Show. .com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
Women and children, front line, log on, tune in, stand and be counted, wounded, stationed in the belly of the vulture, watch your back, there's no civilians, women, children, front line, listen, consider this a distant, early warning, the fire's imminent, pollution, gathering dust, particles, funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation, too fed, check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. We want to keep you wide awake. And incidentally, we have just the man for the job from Wide Awake News and the Rents Network as well, Charlie McGrath. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinnie. How are you?
I am somewhat fabulous. A lot better now that you're here.
What's that, buddy? Hold on a second. Let me try to... Sorry for the... connection issue, but I'm calling in from the cell phone.
All right, no problem, mate, no problem. Well, like I was saying, it's just much better now that you're here, and I'm just wondering what you'd like to talk about today.
Well, it's a scumbaggery. How about that? I mean, that's, you know, you brilliantly bring that to the program every night, and I think looking at the situation here, the sellout of our Congress and the sellout of... both the left and the right to bring us the latest crisis, which is, of course, the fiasco, which is Obamacare. And I don't know how much of that you're covering over there in New Zealand, but it's as big a disaster as anybody had predicted, and then more so, in fact. So
we're
down this road to complete totalitarian police state. We are forced to now buy a private policy from a private company in order for privilege to be an American, and it's just one more death nail in the coffin of freedom, Vinnie Eastwood.
How many nails do they have to drive home before people realize that they're trapped in a coffin buried alive?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. It's a great question, and it's staggering to me how much the masses will take. You know, and I know you've commented that on the same thing in New Zealand, and And, you know, looking at what's happening inside of Europe, the same. You know, it's amazing the tolerance people will have as long as the, you know, the gladiator game of the day is on or the beer is flowing and the lights are on. But, you know, I sometimes think it's going to take a complete total meltdown for people to stand up for themselves and stand up for their future. You know, literally,
you know, actually, there's a historical context. There's a historical context for this, Charlie. In times of crisis, people pull together and find out who they really are and find out that they like that person who they really are.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And maybe that's just it. Maybe what this planet really needs is not this illusion of solving crises that are brought to us by government, right? Because that seems to be how the whole planet is governed now. We'll make up a crisis, we'll scare the hell out of the people, either financially or politically or militarily. You know, we have to act now in order to avert this crisis that's being presented to us. But maybe what we really need is a true crisis, you know, a true breakdown, so that people will be shaken out of their faux reality and realize, you know, the domination that this global elite class is perpetrating on the people of the world. I do believe a breakdown crisis would be a healthy cleansing for this planet. I mean, how much better off would we be now if we would have just taken the financial collapse of 2008, Vinny? If we'd have just let it all fall apart then, how much more ground would have been covered towards a positive, sustainable economy, and throwing a bunch of people in prison? How much better off would we be as a planet if we could have purged the fraudulent failure at that point instead of pretending that it's fixed by throwing the world into more and more debt?
Well, government seems to be a crisis delivery system, if I understand it correctly. And it seems to me that there is no possibility for the scumbaggery of the private corporations to exist without them being able to buy off the government to act as the monopoly of force.
I concur wholeheartedly. And that's one thing that when people talk about free market capitalism or capitalism in general now, you know, it has taken on this bastardized meaning that is nothing near what we have right now, right? There's no such thing as free market capitalism. It is capitalism by bribery, which you have these mega corporations that could not exist in a free market capitalist system. They wouldn't even be an afterthought at this point in time, because they can't thrive and function without direct fascist government intervention. That is currently the system, at least I'll speak for the United States, which I might as well be speaking for the entire West. That is the system we have now. If you're big enough and you're powerful enough and you have enough financial influence to generate legislation that benefits your sector, be it financial or military or security, then you'll be successful. And if you're not, then you have no place in this fascist state.
Well, it occurs to me also that you talked about we need one big crisis for everybody to go through in order to get over this. Well, I don't know about you, but I've been through a big crisis in my life, and I know that a lot of other people in the truth movement have been and went into the big, big poverty and all of that kind of stuff. So it seems like on an individual basis, at some point, we've gone through a Great Depression, much like an economic depression. And out of that Great Depression came innovation, came new tools, new survival methods, because of the necessity for it. One thing strikes me is that we do need crisis, but it doesn't need to affect us all at the same time. It's probably worse if it affects it all at the same time. But I think everybody individually needs their own incredibly painful crisis to jump them out of the soft reality that everything's all sunshine and rainbows, something that shows you, really slaps you in the face, the darkness and scumbaggery around you. Because only then, when it has directly affected you, are you going to be willing to commit to the commitment level that is required in order to expose said scumbaggery.
No, I can see that point, and I think it's valid, especially if an individual goes through a traumatic event, be it financial or personal or whatever, and they come out on the other side tempered a little bit, and maybe it changes their attitude. I know a lot of veterans end up being outstanding activists because they go through, real crisis in their life, being in combat zones, and they come back with a different perspective than the dyed-in-the-wool patriot, so-called patriot, who supports every bomb that we drop in every sovereign nation for what turns out to be a pack of lies. So I believe that there is an amount of, if a person or a family goes through crisis, that it will change your attitude and change your perspective. However, I think as society in general, and I'm not trying to, say we're one big hive or anything, but if you just look at the control mechanism, the control apparatus, just in the United States with the, and this is hard to talk about because some people think I'm slamming people who are on welfare or social safety nets, and I'm not. But when you have reality taken off the table, and as you said, this soft reality put in place, and it's in place because you have a never-ending amount of money that's being printed in order to keep over 50% of the people in the country on the dole in one form or another. I really think that is a tool or a mechanism used by the powers that be in order to keep the status quo. Because if you didn't have 50 million people on food stamps or 51% of the people drawing a government check in one form or another, you would have a very large number of people in the streets and looking at why the economy is so devastated. But if you can paper it over and pretend that it's not by spending our future into oblivion, by spending $1.5 trillion a year in deficit and handing out trinkets now, well, then you're just masking the problem, and that's keeping a lot of people asleep. Because unfortunately, there a lot of people are just basing their existence dependent on whatever income they have coming in. So 51% are basing their existence and what they're going to do in the future based on the fact that they're getting a check from government. Then they're not in a big hurry to change the status quo, or they're not in a hurry to rattle the tree. But if we face reality, which is for the last 5 years, we've been over $1 trillion a year in deficit, and we had to swallow some of the real hard medicine that's eventually going to come, I think it would lead people to demand a real change and demand a hard look at how we got where we are and how we amassed all this debt and who benefited from it and who was really end up going to have to pay for it all. So that's why I say quite often that I think what the world needs is a real wake-up call. Unfortunately, it's not going to come through common sense, I don't believe. There will be, like you said, a lot of people who go through events, crisis of one sort or another, and it changes them. But en masse, I think it's going to take a realization of a global depression before people start to really understand how screwed over these big bank corporations have the screw job they've done on the populace of this planet.
Yeah. I remember have you ever seen the movie Fight Club, the Tyler Durden speech? We're the middle children of history, man. We're no purpose of place. Advertising has us chasing cars and clothes, working jobs we hate so we can buy a Shiite Muslim we don't need.
We've got no great line. Wars. And it's very true.
No great depression.
Our great
war is a spiritual war. Our great depression is our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. There's days like this week, I've been on the road, as I mentioned in Skype there before the program, and I spent 4 days in the South in Alabama, and the disparity between the haves and have-nots is greater than it's ever been in this country, and getting worse. And, I saw that when I took a trip down in the southern U.S. here. Seeing the massive wealth of some and the massive poverty of others, and it was really somewhat surreal and somewhat depressing to realize that this is happening all over this country and frankly all over the world, and none of the misery or sorrow is ever focused on, right? It's always, hey, the Dow Jones is going to cross all times high, so everything's going to be okay. Hey, we're going to raise the debt ceiling, so everything's going to be okay. And there's times I really worry about the day that's coming when this all comes home to roost, and you know, it's going to be a real shocking wake up call for a lot of people. And they're going to spend, you know, they're going to spend some time wondering what have they done with the last several years of their life while they've heard messages like you and I deliver, while they've known reality, you know, peripherally anyway. They've had a taste of reality because the news is out there. I mean, you can find the truth. It's just a matter if you decide to accept it or live in the perceived reality. So there's a big shock coming. And, you know, a year from now, 10 years from now, I don't know. But when it does, I think a lot of people are going to be taken by storm in Eastwood.
Yeah. Well, I think...
Yeah, or not.
When it comes to survival gear, all right, there's one item which people often don't stock up on, which they really should, and that's toilet paper. And the second most important survival item rests between your ears. It's your brain. Don't let it shut down, because when you're afraid, you can't think. So in a crisis, you've got to remember to stay calm, assess the situation, analyze the threats, figure out what your targets are, what your objectives are, and execute. Don't mess around. Don't blame people for what's going on. Take care of everyone. Survive. Watch everybody else's back and make sure that they know how to watch yours. Stick together. Don't go out alone. These kind of things. In a real crisis, you've got to be thinking about the person next to you. Really. You've got to be talking about making sense in a world gone absolutely mad.
No
now, Charlie, I've always been meaning to ask you, have you actually ever seen combat?
Have I? Yes. I was in the 2nd Army Cavalry Regiment during the Papa Bush Gulf War. So, yeah, I was stationed in Germany, and we were the spearhead of the 7th Corps to go in across the berms into Iraq. So, yeah, but your advice is good. I think it's really good advice. And while you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, governed by crisis, and it's also conditioned by crisis, because we're not supposed to look at ourselves, our neighbors, or our friends for the kind of support you truly need in a breakdown situation or in a crisis situation. We're being conditioned to look at government for the answer. And, you know, and it works as long as the crisis in hand is a staged event, like we've seen over and over and over again. But, you know, one day it won't be, and there'll be a great mass of people that turn to the government looking for, you know, looking for the FEMA support, and it's just not going to be there in the way they think it's going to be.
Oh, it'll be there all right.
Yeah, just in a way that's terrifying. You're right.
We've got FEMA transport all ready for everybody to evacuate the cities. Well, hold on a second. These look like cattle cars. Yes, yes, yes. It's all authorized. Trust us. We're wearing uniforms. We're doing it for your safety.
It's for your own good. Step inside.
Yeah. Have some here. They're even passing around bags of Doritos. Hey, what's this funny flavor on that Dorito? Oh, it's just MSG. What's MSG? Oh, it's an artificial sweetener that we extract from baboon anus. Oh, that's nice. It is nice, bro. Want another one? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you've had a chance. I'm sure you have. You've probably done 3 or 4 shows on it already. But I found it interesting. We had in the midst of Obamacare, we had this Obamacare argument going on back and forth. And the establishment media is all over this story because it's, you know, it's drawing the battle lines for the midterm elections coming up here pretty soon, and then forward to 2016. But I found it interesting that in the midst of the heat of the scandal, we had this shooting at LAX. And have you covered it in this last week at all?
We've mentioned it briefly. And speaking of an election coming up, there's also an ad break coming up. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions
traditions which framed and taught us our standards of godhood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Charlie McGrath from WideAwakeNews.com on the Rents Radio Network. His slot goes pretty much directly after mine. Is 5 days a week you're doing, Charlie, or is Karen doing the fifth day with Karen's Corner every week still?
Well, yeah, and it's been a while. It's been a while since I've been on, so we've had quite a schedule change. But ironically, you're 100% accurate now. We took an earlier time spot for a couple months in the summer here, and we have a nice crew of guest hosts to come on and help me Monday through Friday. But starting next week, we're right back into the post Vinnie Eastwood time slot. So. Even though the schedule's been kind of jumbled for the last couple months, starting next week we're back right where we were, which is directly after your program.
I've found that in the last couple of weeks, a lot of people have been having a lot of confusing stuff happen, right?
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've noticed more aggression in people, more standoffishness, more confusion, more stress kind of thing, more financial difficulty. It just seems like everybody's like on edge for one reason or another.
I have to agree with you, Vinny, 100%. And it's kind of eerie to hear you say that, because I think it was not even, you know, 2 or 3 days ago on a program where I said the exact same thing, that you can feel the collective stress level, I guess you will, I feel it, where people are more on edge. They're looking for more distraction, and they're shorter fused. There's definitely a feeling that I concur with you on, which is people are a lot more stressed out and they're not handling it well. And, you know, it goes with what we talked about in the first segment, which, you can pretend for so long that things are getting better. But, you know, if you look at the real numbers of the value of people's net worth or their home value or their how their jobs are decreasing as far as the amount of income, 5 years running, if you look at the amount of debt that's starting to pile back up, personal debt and student loan debt, I mean, you realize that people are living beyond their means. They're being encouraged to do so. So they're amassing all this stress. And maybe it could be just a consciousness thing, you know, where people understand pretty much on whole that things are not going the right direction. And it's, you know, I'm a father. I'm concerned about what we're seeing coming down the road for our kids and what the future holds for the next generation. I'm very concerned what it holds for this generation. I think there is this level of stress that just really isn't talked about, but you sense it for sure, and I would have to agree with that.
Now, there's also the other one. There's the fight or flight mechanism, which comes into place during stress, and this is what all the aggression is about. And there's a fear, and even in some cases movements, to get militant during this time, like storm the White House kind of thing. And it just terrifies me, because I've heard so many stories from people who have actually seen what happens in war up close, personal, and you do not want that in the streets of America, ever, for any frickin' reason.
Well, I agree that, you know, I've seen what bombed out hulks of cities look like. I've seen what it looks like when, rocks and sticks go up against the M250 cal machine guns. It's carnage. And, you know, I hope to never see that, but it feels like, as part of, describing this national and international stress level, I mean, it feels like the world is on a path to that kind of carnage, where it will be, you know, this civil war mentality or this civil pushback that won't be civil at all that's coming. I hope it doesn't, because I think the people that romanticize this, especially in our community, that romanticize a breakdown crisis and chaos and complete and total, pandemonium in the streets as some kind of romantic notion that's going to be cool, they don't get it. They don't understand it. And, you know, it might seem cool for a few minutes, but I think the first time, a friend or a loved one is laying in a pool of blood, it loses its appeal very quickly.
Yeah. And I think that's how they get everybody indoctrinated in the first place, when I say they, I mean just generally the establishment, because you see all these advertisements on television recruiting the young and the vulnerable, recruiting specifically in poor neighborhoods where there aren't a whole lot of options, sending these kids away, and some of them don't come back, and if they do come back, they're often traumatized, some of them addicted to drugs, then they get denied their pensions, get denied their vet benefits, all of this kind of stuff, and then they wind up being one of the, a quarter of the homeless population confirmed to be veterans of the United States military. They just take you in, chew you up, and just let you go. And it's basically
you couldn't be more right. Like we discussed, I was in the first Gulf War. My brother's, he's a year younger than me. He was in the first Gulf War. Well, he stayed in. So not only was he in the first Gulf War, he ended up with three tours in Iraq since 2003 and a tour in Afghanistan. He finally got out, and, I mean, he's a broken individual, you know, and he's disconnected from the family, lots of brothers and sisters, and we talk to each other all the time, and we're like, you know, have you heard from our brother? And, you know, there'll be a year period of time go by. We don't know if he's dead or alive, and when we do talk to him, I mean, this is a brother that I'm 11 months older than, so obviously we were very, very close growing up. That I don't even recognize who he is anymore, because, you know, he's been chewed up and spit out, and he's not an isolated incident. I mean, this happens all the time. I mean, there's so many broken men and women coming back that are basically kicked to the wayside, and to add insult to injury, we have a government that now wants to put them at the top of the list of being potential terror threats against our own country. So, yeah, I mean, it's horrific what we're doing to our veterans. It's horrific what we're doing to, you know, the people of the future generation of this country. And not only that, but to the lands that we send these kids to, you know, air quote, fight for freedom.
Now, who are the kind of people who would wind up going to fight for freedom? Would it be criminals? Would it be lower order scum on the food chain? Or would it actually be some of the best, most honorable, and some of the brightest that wind up going over and dying, and the other ones get left behind to repopulate?
That's exactly right. Not only dying, that let's not forget, it really messes these guys up. I mean, it's a shock. If they're over there and they're engaged in combat and lives are lost on the other side, you know, the instant rationalization is, I was doing it for my country. I was doing it for the right reason. But when it finally smacks on you that, you know what? No, I was over here for a lie, and people died and died at my hands because of a lie. I mean, that's a psychological kick in the head. And I think a lot of people are dealing with that. They are over there for what they believe, or are doing what they're doing, what they believe is for honorable reasons. But when it comes home that, you know, they've been lied to, it's just another shock to their system that they have to deal with. And we see it all too often. In fact, I've been telling the story the last month since it happened, but, you know, I have I live in a fairly nice neighborhood in a fairly nice townhouse. I'm going to say, you know, upper middle class. And not more than 2 months ago, I'm awoken by a fight at 3:30 in the morning between, you know, two guys screaming at each other, followed quickly by three shotgun blasts. And, you know, an Afghan vet came back, was partying with his friends, lost it because of an argument. I mean, his ability to deal with social scenarios, just something as simple as an argument, spiraled out of control to the point he grabbed a shotgun and put it in his friend's belly, pulled the trigger, and then shot two other people. You know, one life lost, one leg lost, and another guy wounded. But, you know, when it all came out, of course, in the next day he was in the paper, he just branded as a murderer. But when the truth came out, you know, it was found out that he had several tours in Afghanistan and obviously mental and emotional problems. And, you know, again, these are two stories from, you know, about my own family, my brother, and this individual Afghan vet on a shooting spree that are just me, right? So how many of these stories are out there? Thousands and thousands and thousands of cases happen like this all the time around the country and around the world. And for the most part, our patriotic, so-called patriotic media, they don't even talk about it. They'll talk about Veterans Day coming up and red, white, and blue, salute the flag, and let's go spread democracy around the world. But they certainly don't want to talk about the ugly side, which is, you know, putting these kids through meat grinders, both physically and mentally, and then the aftermath thereof.
It's certainly the same case for some special forces in New Zealand. We sent overseas, toured in Afghanistan as well. And because of the covert nature of the missions that they're running, also not only the fact that you have to do things that you may not even emotionally agree with and deal with the guilt, much like a lot of other soldiers do, but also at the same kind, you can't even talk to anybody about it because you're also sworn to secrecy. So,
yeah.
Not only do you have this terrible experience, but there's no way to get therapy for it. There's no way to even get any kind of release. And so you bottle it up all inside. Sometimes you get addicted to drugs, and then you wind up going nuts, right? It's the frickin' insanity of the system that is spilling over into young men and women through these things that they're being forced to do. And this kind of mind control paradigm. You know that when you're doing mind control experiments, Charlie, they do your sleep deprivation, group punishment. Don't you get up real early when you're in boot camp so you barely have the chance to sleep? Don't they punish everybody collectively in boot camp so that nobody falls out of line? And don't they do that in medical school? Don't they do that in law school as well? Everything turns everybody into a mind-controlled slave so that they can get you, an ordinary, good, decent person with a bit of conditioning, into a killer who will take orders, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Do I sound better? Does that sound like I'm a little closer to you, Vinny? Because I'm actually in my home studio now. I made it through traffic on the cell. And so now, you know, at least for the last part of this hour, I can join you in a call that you might, that I can actually hear you better on. So I'm glad. But you're 100% right. Condition these men and women that their cause is just. Condition them to follow orders without questioning them.
You're kind of going up and down, Charlie. Like it's sometimes really loud and sometimes sort of a little bit low and near normal. It was kind of like weird. But anyway, sorry, continue.
I'll do some quick adjustments here and see. Maybe my settings are all. Yeah, I'm really spiking here. So hold on one second.
It sounds good like that, but
I'll. Is this good for you? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, and it's all about conditioning these guys to follow orders without question, and you know, to make them feel good about why they're doing what they're doing, wrapping it in this phony patriotism. But it certainly seems they only have to hold that con, that snow job, until you know they're out of the service, and then they become just one of the forgotten millions. And you're right; it's a huge portion of our homeless, our veterans. And I talking to people like Diane Everett Snyder, who works with veterans and works with these people who've been damaged, you know, the answer is always the same: more and more pharmaceuticals, get them pumped up and drugged up, and, you know, hope for the best, I guess. But in a lot of cases, they snap. And when they snap, you know, they generally hurt the ones that they care about the most.
Yeah. And I think I was talking to Douglas Dietrich, and he said that what they do is, because combat veterans are really valuable, they, with a lot more experience in the field, they've got black marks put on their records. Like, they'll just lie about it and say that the person's a pedophile or a thief or a murderer or something like that, when nothing ever happened and they haven't been arrested or court-martialed or nothing. So that when they get back to the world, when they rotate, they can't go get a job even pumping gas. Like, they'll trust you with it with a $10 million tank, but they won't trust you with a frickin' gas pump in your hand. And some of the veterans don't like that, and so they prefer to live in the streets than go overseas again and kill somebody else's kids. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Like, good morning, Vietnam. Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think I'd love to do a remake of Good Morning, Vietnam and play Robin Williams' character. Frick, that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I really enjoyed that movie when it came out, and you could do Good Morning, New Zealand. Actually, You have more. Where's your listener? You have a lot of listeners in New Zealand that know you probably live, right? Because you're out there in the streets and you're confronting people. But
it was quite funny actually. I went to a public meeting the other day, and almost everybody in the crowd came up individually and said something to me. So, like, the whole crowd knew who I was, wanted to talk to me. It was really interesting. I was actually trying to feed. It was almost like trying to talk to somebody, get a conclusion real quickly, then go on to the next person. You know, like I'm signing a book or something.
Right. Well, that's cool, though. That's cool. That means you're last time I spoke to you, it's been a while since I've been on your program, but you were the number one news download on YouTube in New Zealand. I'm sure that's still the case.
I'm still number one and by an even wider margin now.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
I passed over 10,000 YouTube subscribers the other week, Charlie.
Good man. Good man. That's half the population in New Zealand. Yeah, that's a lot. That the 10,000 mark is a big deal, and you deserve it. And it's, you know, I always think of that when I think of your program and guerrilla media and what you do, and that we need the folks who are in, you know, parts of the world that maybe us here in America forget about. And it isn't just New Zealand, but even England or the other parts of Europe or Australia. It's so important to have the testimonial from those regions, because it paints, as you do wonderfully all the time, paints this real picture of it isn't a New Zealand problem. It isn't an Australia problem or a United States problem. It's a global problem, and it's interconnected, and we're all on the same script, and we're all being led to the same place. So, that's why I appreciate your program and what you do from down under. That's considered down under, right? You're down under.
Yeah, but everybody just refers to down under like Australia's down under. New Zealand's New Zealand.
Okay. You're New Zealand.
Yeah.
You're cooler than Australia.
Like, for example, you're in the Northern Hemisphere, Charlie. Has anybody ever called you as an American an up over?
An up over? I might have been called
down
something
under,
along
so
those.
You must be up over.
Yeah, I might have heard something along those lines, you know. Shove it up and over? No, no.
See,
no, I spent most of the week being called a Yank because I was in the southern U.S. And, my lack of accent or accent compared to them, I suppose, is very noticeable. But no, never a up and over.
Yeah, yeah. That sounded like a sexual reference. But anyway.
Well, take it how you will, I guess. I'm flattered.
That's what she said.
Vinny, what's it going to come to? What's it going to come to? I mean, you know, I know this is the final segment of this hour, but, I do think about this quite a bit, and some of the remarks you said about, people need to be calm and take events as they happen. I think it's great advice, and I'm always thinking that I don't spend enough time delivering that message. Keep your head, keep calm, because we really don't know. I mean, we can guess what's coming next, but we can look at the agenda as it's been presented, the plan for global domination through the financial industry or global governance, financial governance, and estimate and determine what's coming next. But we really, really don't know, and it is important to keep an even keel. And I think a lot of us in independent media grab onto the shock and the sensational headline of the day, and we don't spend enough time. And I'm not speaking to you; I'm speaking to me personally here. That don't spend enough time trying to remind people to, you know, keep your heads, keep focus what's important, and then, you know, cull out some time to enjoy what there is to enjoy in life, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's why the Vinnie Eastwood show is a good part of a general radio diet. Like, I don't know, maybe you can listen to maybe three or four shows or whatever in any given week. I just recommend people make one of those shows the Vinnie Eastwood show, not because, you know, we've got great guests and good information, but because we try to help you actually deal with it is the thing. Yeah. A lot of other people will give you this information, but they won't tell you how to actually process it and deal with it emotionally. If you can't do that, then you have a massive quantity of trauma that's being projected on you through the radio waves every day, and you're wound up. It's like the mind is almost like a toilet bowl. You've got to keep flushing that that excrement all the way out through it every single day. Otherwise, you get some kind of a blockage, and you need some kind of therapist or a plumber.
Now you're just grossing me out. This is it, though. You got me laughing, and that is one thing that you have the ability to do. You crack people up. Sometimes they're laughing with you, sometimes they're laughing at you, but they're laughing, and that's a big part of I think of a good balanced approach to the horrific nature of the reality that we live in.
Well, somebody said I had a funny accent. Now, see, I thought I was always funny because of my sharp wit. Now I found out it's because of a speech impediment.
That's right. Yeah, you think you're witty and quick-witted and have people bust in a gut, but they're not used to the Kiwi accent. It makes them smile, makes them happy.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why I recommend when people listen to the show or come as a guest on the show, have some kind of tropical fruit drink or something like that, you know. You mean like an island in the sun, you know, if you're feeling, you know, like relax on some kind of a lawn chair among garden gnomes that for some reason resemble Dick Cheney. You know, relax, for Frank's sake.
Yeah, that's right. It's therapy. It's the Vinnie Eastwood therapy hour.
Yeah. And
I do have a question, but I wondered this in the past, and I had a friend, a coworker, who actually married a New Zealander, and I think she married him just to get there, you know, just to get to New Zealand, because it seems to be, a little bit more squared away, at least as far as she was concerned. Now, and that happened, that actually went down probably a year or so, maybe a year and a half back. And since that time, you've really, you know, informed me, and I've learned through you that the same things, kind of corruption and scumbags that we have here, you certainly have there. But why is New Zealand? I mean, it seems like the people that I do know that know about New Zealand, they're all aching to get there. Is it a wonderland? Is that where I should be looking to set up shop someday?
Well, you know, Max Egan, right, in Australia, he came through Auckland Airport the other day, and I picked him up. And we went for a quick drive to grab a coffee and a cup of tea for him. And as we were driving through all the suburbs and things of that nature, he said, it looks exactly like Melbourne. It looks exactly like Canberra. It looks exactly like Adelaide. It looks exactly like Perth. It looks exactly like, you know, every place in New Zealand is exactly, you know, all the suburbs and cities. You could mistake them for being any other part of Australia. And it's the same when you go to the States. I mean, everything's just basically the same. We've developed this monoculture. So when you think, oh, maybe I don't understand New Zealand, or maybe it's a bit different, just apply what you know about your own culture and then mirror it, okay? Imagine it's just got a slightly funnier accent and slightly different looking scumbag. All right, but the end result is the same.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, you know, that's the case throughout the West. I guess we call it the West, and we're working really hard to turn what isn't the West into a destabilized nightmare, so we can go in there and inject our Western values into that region of the world.
A destabilized nightmare. That's what happens when you got too many horses and not enough lodgings for them.
Good one. Good one.
Yeah. My jokes might not be funny, but frack, they're stupid and you can laugh at them just as much as you can laugh with them. Mm-hmm. And it occurs to me that because stuff is so frickin' stressful, I say force yourself to laugh. Even if it's not funny, just cackle your ass off, because just the mere act, and this is an interesting study that was released, the mere act of smiling at yourself in the mirror actually makes you happier. It makes your brain think that you're not actually depressed, even if you're forcing it and faking it. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting, and I've heard, I don't think I've read the report, but I've heard similar reports cited, and I completely believe that. You know, it's the same thing as getting some sunshine. You get that vitamin E, you know, released in your system. And you know, if you, it's really easy for people in our positions where we do this every single day and we look at the news and, you know, sometimes we feel like there's little victories made. And sometimes we look at the overwhelming nature of the NWO and realize that this fight's going to go on and it's going to continue to get worse. It is easy, you know, probably not for you because your nature is so, you have such a comical nature in the first place, and you always have had a look at the lighter side of genocide, as you say. You know, it is easy for people to get swamped and overwhelmed, especially folks just coming into this, whatever, awakened community or this truth community, whatever you want to call it. I hear the music going, so I want to say thank you for having me on, Vinny. I greatly appreciate it.
All right, and I greatly appreciate you stopping by, sharing your perspectives, and you'll be coming up next on Rents Radio, and also I think Christy from Soul Juniors Radio is coming up next on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Charlie's website, I believe, is WideAwakeNews.net or .com?
.com, you got it, .com.
WideAwakeNews.com. Charlie McGrath, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you enjoy your weekend, sir.
Vinny Eastwood, I'll get you on soon, and have me back on again, sir.
Yeah, got to be done, mate. Catch
all
you
right,
later.
Bye-bye.
See you later, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening indeed, and check out the archives at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And please, for the love of the Norwegian Chiefs, donate and subscribe today.